live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, let me start first with some basketball. Now, if America did not know about Jarrett Allen before last night, they should have. And if they don't know about him right now, then they're just not paying attention. Jarrett Allen, the center for the Brooklyn Nets. Jarrett Allen, this dude's a man. And if you didn't know any of that before last night, come on, Jarrett! You do right now. You do now because in the first quarter, Lakers v. Nets, LeBron gets the ball at the top of the key on a secondary break, makes a move, gets into the lane, takes off. You know how the rest goes. LeBron dunks over some poor, helpless sucker, and social media goes off. So let's go ahead and roll it.
And rebounded by Kuzma. Lakers get it up the floor in a hurry. James, hard drive. Oh, rejected! The throw just got the king.
Push the pace. Big old block by Jarrett Allen.
All of it. He got all of that ball. There was no dispute right there.
See, come to find out that was not some poor, helpless sucker. That was Jarrett Allen. And he was getting up to make sure that LeBron did not get down. That was badass. That was awesome. You know, when people wonder why guys even bother contesting dunks, because 99 out of 100 times, you're going to end up on a poster and getting annihilated on Twitter. Well, that's why you do it. Because that one time out of 100, you might end up a legend. Run it back one more time.
And rebounded by Kuzma. Lakers get it up the floor in a hurry. James, hard drive. Oh, rejected! The throw just got the king! Push the
pace. It was incredible. You wonder how incredible. That was only the ninth time in his entire career that LeBron has had a dunk blocked. The number of guys who have blocked one of LeBron's dunks in the NBA wouldn't even fill out a five-on-five scrimmage. You could get every NBA player who's ever blocked one of LeBron's dunks. Take them all to Applebee's, pay for the meal, and get it for under $100. That's how small that group is. Allen knows how big it is to be a part of a group that is that small.
That's a hell of a list to be on. You know, he's an amazing player. I got the chance to do it, so I'm on the list forever now.
He's right. You are on the list forever now. Jarrett Allen, man. As for LeBron, you wonder how that felt. It has not happened very often, but even LeBron knows it'll happen, even to him.
He's in his 20s. I'm in my 30s. It'll take me a little longer to get warmed up, but that's fine. I mean, you're a shot blocker. You can get a block. It happens. It's probably all over social media, so that's cool.
It was, and it is, and that does happen. It happens to us all. And when LeBron says, I'm in my 30s, I got to warm up, he did. He ended up 36, 13, and 8. So that should shut anybody up who saw that dunk and said, man, that old man, he is getting old. I mean, sure he is. Old enough to nearly drop a triple-double on a weeknight in Brooklyn. But believe it or not, Jarrett Allen blocking LeBron's dunk and the Nets getting over on the Lakers 115-110 was not the most interesting thing about the Lakers last night. If Jarrett Allen made a statement during that game, LeBron made a bigger statement before the game. Because before the game, LeBron talked about the possibility of the Lakers making a deal for Anthony Davis. He talked about it, and he talked about it on the record. He told ESPN, and I quote, "That would be amazing. That would be amazing. Like, duh. That'd be incredible." End quote. He's right, of course. Trading for a 25-year-old big with the handle of a guard who's averaging 28, 12, 5, 3, and 2 would be amazing. Like, duh. Because Anthony Davis is amazing. LeBron's like, duh. When you talk about the most NBA players, when you talk about most of them, you can hit the basic stats, right? Points, rebounds, or points and assists without having to say exactly what they are. Like, you can say a big man is averaging 10 and 6, and everybody knows that's 10 points and 6 boards. But in the case of Anthony Davis, he's averaging so much of everything that I've got to say he's averaging 28 points, more than 12 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 blocks, and 2 steals. And he's 25. And recently, he signed with LeBron's agent, Rich Paul. Uh-oh! You see, if the Lakers do make a move for this guy, before the Celtics do, Laker fans would freak the hell out. You think those Laker car flags were flying after LeBron arrived? Imagine what it would be like after AD arrives to join LeBron. And then the question is, would the Lakers be willing to give up what it takes to get Anthony Davis? And the answer better be, hell yes. Hell yes. I know a lot of you Laker loyalists love the young core, love the young nucleus, think that there are certain untouchables. Not according to me, there's not. Not if you've got a chance to get Anthony Davis. If you have a chance to get this guy. For instance, if Davis does not want to re-up and take the extra $70 million that he can make in New Orleans. If they've got a chance to get this guy and he's willing to leave, you do everything you can. Nobody is untouchable. If I'm Magic, I'm picking up the phone and saying, you want Lonzo? Great. Brandon Ingram? Sure. You want that statue of me outside of Staples? You can have that too. And LeBron. LeBron's not just thinking about AD, of course. He still has Melo on the mind. LeBron and Melo reportedly had dinner in New York Monday night. And then last night, LeBron was going on about that old guy.
I don't run the team, and obviously, you know, there's some things that would need to be worked on both sides. But, you know, I've always, you know, wanted to play along, you know, Melo, and if the opportunity presents itself, it'd be great. So we'll see what happens.
I mean, damn, it's one thing to be talking about AD on the record and pining for AD on the record, but talking about Melo on the record, pining for Melo on the record. Yeah, I'm not sure how many people think that Melo would be a great addition to the Lakers. In fact, I'm not sure if anybody other than LeBron and Melo think that Melo would be a great addition to the Lakers. But if they can somehow pull the trigger for Davis and Melo really makes LeBron that happy, I will allow it, I suppose. Let me say this one more time. The Lakers are a hell of a lot better than anybody expected. And the West is not as good. In fact, the West is wide ass open, especially with Houston sliding the way they are. The Lakers are 18-13. They finished up a 1-3 road trip that should have been a lot better. LeBron knows that. LeBron knows there's actually a chance for the Lakers to do some real damage right now, not in the future, but right now. I mean, does anybody really believe LeBron when he says he's all about patience? That he's all about preaching patience? Really, since when? This guy's not patient, nor should he be. He's 34. He's on the clock. He knows it. He's 34.
34.
He's on the clock. He knows it. And the guy knows that they're farther than they should have been, but he still needs help. Let me just say this. This guy never, ever says or does anything without a purpose. A purpose behind it. That Anthony Davis stuff did not just come flying out of his gap. He knew what he was saying. He knew what he was doing when he said it. This guy needs help. He needs it right now because he knows they have the opportunity to do some damage right now. So the question is, how are Irv and Rob going to handle that? LeBron started the ball rolling. Magic and Pelinka need to keep it going. Signing LeBron was pretty impressive. Signing LeBron and making a deal for Anthony Davis would be legendary. And they should do whatever it takes and whatever's necessary to get this guy. And Brow, you should want to be here. That's not a lock either, by the way. It's not a lock that he'll want out. It's not a lock that the Pelicans are going to move this guy. They will only move him if they have to. If you're Anthony Davis and you can sign a supermax deal and make $70 million more, would you stay where you are? And what about that whole thing about Kevin Durant saying, yeah, the thing is, though, stars do not want to run with LeBron. I know LeBron thinks it would be awesome for Anthony Davis to come here, but does Davis think it would be awesome to run with LeBron? I don't know about that.
That's cool.
If you ask Kevin Durant, he'd say no. We are joined by Manny Diaz. Manny, it's good to have you on. How are you?
Doing outstanding, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, Manny. All right, so you were introduced as new head coach at Temple last week. Today is the early signing day, and you're continuing in your role as defense coordinator with the Miami Hurricanes through the Pinstripe Bowl, so it's an extremely busy time for you. I got to ask, what has life been like for the last couple of weeks?
It's been like drinking out of a fire hose, for sure. You get on the job, and the next morning after I got the job, I was on an airplane at 6 a.m., and there was 3 days left of the contact recruiting period where I could see kids, so you're trying to bop around and see as many as you could. We had a bunch on our campus on Sunday, the local kids that could come by, and just to meet the families and put a face to the name and try to reassure them that the reasons why they chose Temple were all still good and still intact. And then after the sign day, after the contact period ended, was able to rejoin Miami, get ready to beat Wisconsin in the bowl game. Flew back to Philly today for signing day. We'll go back to Miami tonight to get back to bowl prep for Wisconsin. So I've been racking up the freaking flyer miles.
Boy, that's wild. Manny Diaz joining us. All right, so as the class comes together and you get to know the current Temple players, what is your message to them about the culture and the identity that you want them to have?
That's a great question. The big thing was that we didn't want them to believe that it was going to change. When they've had an identity like they've had the success that they've had, they're always nervous when a new coach comes in. Are you going to try to change everything and sort of, you know, start over with a total reboot? And I wanted to reassure them that that was not going to be the case. A lot of what has made this place win at its core are things that I really believe in. We were able to retain our outstanding strength coach, Coach Feely. So some early moves to let them know that, you know, what they feel, what they have confidence in, the reason why they love playing here, that all that would still be intact.
You know, when you lay it out like that, for instance, Jaquan Johnson, who played for you at Miami, said, quote, his passion, the love he gives us, the care that he shows us, it makes us want to go out there and play for him, run through a wall for him, end quote. Listen, I mean, you can scheme all you want, and you can't have the success that you've had without great schemes, but how important is it that the players feel that passion and that love that you have for them?
That's everything, because there is no scheme that can overcome that. If you don't have that bond, that, you know, people throw out words like culture, but it's true. You know, the players have to know that you're for them. They have to know that you're a man of integrity, that what you say is what you mean. And when you have that and they really believe that you have their best interest in heart, they'll give you that extra. They'll do that for you. But it's got to be genuine, because there's too many of them and they're too wise. They'll see through the phonies.
Temple head football coach Manny Diaz joins us. Now, your journey to this point is pretty amazing, and I want to get into that thing in a minute, but why don't we start with where you were? You're from Miami. You went to Miami Country Day. Your father was the mayor of Miami. So if you were going to leave Miami and the Hurricanes, it had to be for something special. What was it about Temple that made you feel like that was the right move?
Yeah, that's really accurate. Well, when you see the run of success that they've had, and there's been different head coaches involved that have all had a part of the success, perhaps they all on their own are outstanding head coaches, and that could be part of it. That could be true. But maybe there's something on the inside here that's allowing them to all have a chance to have success. So you don't really know what it is from the outside, and it's when you get inside, and that started really with the interview process and really every day since I've gotten a job, you start to understand why are some things set up in place here at Temple to win. And usually the answer, like in most professions, it comes down to people. There's some really, really great people here. They're united in their purpose. There's great alignment on who Temple is, what the school's identity is, and that really trickles down into the athletics department. We've got great leadership with Pat Kraft, and so that all that made you feel really comfortable that if you were going to make a move to become a head coach, you want it to be somewhere where you can be successful, and you want to be somewhere where you're surrounded by great people.
Well, or if you want to make a move to become a coach at all. For instance, if we go back even further than your time at Miami, after going to Miami Country Day, you went to Florida State. You were the sports editor of the school newspaper. You had a TV show there as well. So at that point, what was the thinking? What was the goal? And what kind of a future did you have in mind for yourself?
Yeah, I wanted your job.
Right, right.
I was going to be, you know, I really thought that was going to be the ticket for me. And I worked at ESPN for 2 years coming out of college and was really loving it. And really, I was working on the NFL shows and tight with some of the analysts that they had up there at the time. And they would kind of put little things in my ear. Boy, you'd be a great coach. You know, you should get into coaching. And I didn't even know how you got into coaching. I didn't even know, is there an application you fill out? Do they list openings in the newspaper? I mean, how do you become a coach? And eventually took a leap of faith. My wife she's a big hero in the story because she really pushed me to make that jump. And we left Bristol, headed back down to Tallahassee, and really kind of threw myself at the doorstep of late 1990s Florida State, which at that moment was at the height of their dynasty. And luckily they sort of let me in. It's your classic kind of mailroom story. The first year there, I licked envelopes and mailed out VHS tapes and just made coffee, just did whatever. But luckily it all sort of stemmed from there.
Manny Diaz joining us. I mean, you're jumping around a little bit. It's really amazing because you took that job with ESPN and you were working in production and doing a really nice job. I mean, you had a great opportunity there. Legend has it that you were an absolute football junkie, way more than you're letting on, so much so that Sterling Sharp said that if he got a job in coaching, he wanted you on his staff. Now, I remember Sterling. Manny, I remember talking to him when he played. I remember talking to him after he got that job. My man was tough now. You had to earn that respect. So when Sterling Sharp said to you that if I coach, I want you on my staff, what kind of reaction did you have? What kind of thought did that put in your mind?
That's it. It's amazing that you recall that. That is, Sterling's a guy. I mean, Sterling is really the reason of this whole story, because I remember we were sitting, we'd go do the Monday night show, and there was an Outback Steakhouse. We'd go out afterwards right by ESPN's campus, and he'd say, I'm going to get into coaching. He'd always say, I'm going to be the head coach at the crib, which to him was South Carolina. He says, I'm going to go back to the crib and be the head coach, and I'm going to take you with me. And that just blew my mind, because of a kid who just, you know, simply played high school football. I said, here's Sterling Sharp, like you said, who's not just a guy that's going to just, you know, throw out praise, and said that he's got the respect that, you know, that he would take me as a coach on his staff. And so that really put the seed of that idea in my mind, and it just really started to grow from there.
We're talking to Manny Diaz for a few more moments, but there's more to it. You mentioned your wife, Stephanie. So you're doing a great job in production. The story goes you were even going to get a promotion, but then Stephanie was talking about rolling the dice and trying to get into coaching. First off, is it true that she was pregnant at that time? And then secondly, how much did you know, and you mentioned this, how do I even get into coaching? How do you get a job in coaching?
Yeah, that is true. When we left ESPN, she was 6 months pregnant. I think she was 4 months pregnant when we decided to make the leap and to leave ESPN. And that's one of those stories that it's hard for the family. The family thinks you got a great job. They think you're doing great out of college. And you call them and say, hey, I'm going to go be a football coach. And they all respond like, how does that even happen? And I know, I didn't know what the calendar was. I didn't know how to, you know, what a graduate assistant was, how the structure worked. I just started, you know, sort of cold calling Florida State. And actually the first day they told me no. They said, I'm sorry, son, you sound like a great story. Stone Sharp called on my behalf. But they said, you know, you've already graduated with an undergraduate degree. We can only have two of those guys, two graduate assistants on the staff. So the plan kind of really came to an abrupt halt right then. They called me back the next day. They said, you know what? We found out something you can do. You can be a volunteer in our recruiting office, and that sort of allows you, because you're not on the football side, and that way you can work even though you've got your undergraduate degree. And thank God they called back, because I have no idea where I'd be now if they didn't.
All right, so they did, though, and that was great, and you got the opportunity, and you got your foot in the door. But, like, where did you live? Where did you and Stephanie live? How'd you make that work?
We actually lived in the football dorm. So, like, one of our next-door neighbors was Anquan Boldin. So my son, who's now 21 years old and ironically actually a student at Florida State, we'd be walking him around in his little baby carriage, you know, right in front of Anquan's door, and, you know, stop by and say hello. So yeah, we spent that allowed me to get rid of a car, because it was right across the street from the football complex. And my wife, again, she had to go to work immediately after our son was born, which was very, very difficult on her. And she had to support me for 5 years. It was 5 years before I got a full-time job, you know, a full-time assistant coaching job in college football. So these things are hard to come by. The sort of the luck and timing that gets people in this profession where they want to go is always a part of the story. No matter where it's gone from there, you're always aware of the little breaks you had to get to be able to make it to this point.
He is the head football coach at Temple. Manny Diaz, my guest for another moment. That is amazing. Like, Stephanie supported you for 5 years. You had a baby. You're living in the dorm. This is not an easy life. Look, I get that you were young and you were hungry and you had drive, but how do you stay motivated to keep chasing that dream when you're grinding and it is that challenging? What kept you going?
Yeah, I think because you just had a sense that if you just kept working, you kept persevering, kind of the same thing you preach to the players, that ultimately it's going to break, it's going to turn, and you're going to get that opportunity. And you know, you've got so much invested in it. And you know that when you have a wife like that who believes in you and she's put her faith in you, you almost have the sense that you've got to find a way to make it work. And like I said, we've been very fortunate. We work for some great people. You know, Chuck Amato got the NC State job while we were there after we won the national championship in 99 and invited me to go to NC State with him. And that was a big point in my career. And he's another big part of the story of getting my first, you know, full-time assistant coaching job.
Manny, to that point, one last thought. You worked with some of the best to ever do it. You worked with some of the best coaches ever, guys like Bobby Bowden, Mack Brown, Dan Mullen, the list goes on. What have you taken from those guys that you'll look to apply right now that you got your shot as a head coach?
Great question. Really, from all of them, something a little bit different. that, you know, when you're before you're a head coach, you say, okay, if I ever get this chance, you know, you learn a little bit from this guy, a little bit from that guy. You know, Coach Bowden, it was the way he ran his staff, you know, his lack of ego, and he allowed his coaches to really excel at their job. You know, Mack Brown is a master at you know, understanding, you know, the public relations around a program and doing an amazing job with the high-end boosters and understanding the things it takes to run a really, really hard program to make it look easy when it's really not easy. He was a master at that. You know, Dan Mullen ran a great program, very intelligent coach. He and I see the game of football really similarly in a lot of different ways. So Rick Stockstill and Skip Holtz, also great men in their own right. So you really have had the great fortune, as I mentioned, along with the motto, to learn from all these guys and really try to – you have to be you. You have to be genuine to yourself, but at the same time, you can certainly learn from these guys.
This program, this brand, the Jungle, it is a partnership. It does not work without me, right? But it sure as hell does not work without you. I've understood this for a long, long time. There is a reason why I've done this as long as I've done this. There's a reason why I've done this at a pretty high level for as long as I've done this. Not because I've got any kind of talent. Not because I'm so smart. You know, in part because I work pretty hard at it. But mostly because I get it. I've always understood it. I understand exactly how this thing works. It works as a collaboration. It works as a partnership. I would never have any of this or be in a position to do this without all of you. This is why I go out of my way to make the point. It's a very important point. There is no me without you. It's why we take this thing on the road. It's why we did all those tour stops over the years. It's why we had the smack off. It's why I was in San Diego over the weekend at the Buffalo Wild Wings and hanging out with my pals from 97.3. It's why I showed up on the Woodscopes a few months back. It's why I shout out to y'all on my Instagram account. It's why, when a couple of clones who know each other from this show meet up in Buffalo, I'm going to give them some shine the next day for doing it. Because they freaking earned it. Because it means the world to me. It's really important to me. The guys I'm talking about, Rick! In Buffalo, and Drew the Jumpman Jewett, a.k.a. Kylan Green Bay. Now, Kylan Green Bay is known for an all-time flameout and a Cali road trip that ended with him sleeping in his car for multiple days and a Packers tailgate that some people I know actually attended. Oh, and he did drive to Minneapolis to get my signature on his back, which he then tattooed permanently later on that night. Same guy, same dude. So Rick in Buffalo is known for, that's Kyle in Green Bay. Rick in Buffalo is known for, well, dude is pretty simply the angriest man in the jungle.
If you want to play the part, you got to look and sound the part. And if anyone should know this, it's that theater intern Mark in Hollywood. Mark sounds like a 9-year-old hopped up on helium and stands all of 5'1". And that's when he's wearing his favorite pumps. Yet this tool wants everyone to take him seriously as a trash talker. Sure thing, Mark. Just like playing the role of baby Jesus in your church's Christmas pageant is going to make everyone take you seriously as an actor. It is pretty amazing, though, how a 40-year-old dude can still fit inside a manger.
You see, Rick prides himself in having no friends. In fact, when two-time Smackoff champ Leffen Laguna tweeted him yesterday that, quote, no one likes you, he responded, and I quote, mission accomplished! But that did not stop Kylan Green Bay from driving to Buffalo to meet up with Rick in person to go to a Sabres game and hook up with some other clones. And these dudes documented the entire thing on Twitter on Periscope last night.
We out here, baby. We in Buffalo. Shout out Rick.
What's up, guys? He really wants to get thrown through a table, so that'll be our last order of business tonight.
And that was the beginning of their night. Things started to get rowdier and rowdier as they met up with other clones and started crushing beers. Lots of beers. Now, I was not there. I was following on Twitter. I was not there, but I did gather a few things from Twitter, like this gem. That Kylan Green Bay asked for wings in Buffalo and demanded ranch. Rick tweeted, quote, Kyle just asked for ranch with his wings and almost got his ass kicked every which way, end quote. I understand that Wisco runs on ranch. Hell, back in the day at a Green Bay tour stop, I did a shot of ranch. But you cannot, under any circumstances, order wings with ranch. And you especially cannot do that in Buffalo, the birthplace of wings. It's called the Blue Rule. Either you hit those drummies with blue cheese or you get them with nothing at all. I didn't write the rule. I just know the rule. I didn't write the rule. I simply obey the rule. I didn't write the rule. Buffalo enforces the rule. Add that to your list of reasons to go. But somehow Kyle survived that egregious mistake and somehow also survived wearing a Jim Kelly jersey with a New York Giants beanie. Now, let me say this. This guy is lucky that he was rolling with the Prince of Buffalo last night, or it might have gotten really ugly really quickly. Now, at some point during that game, Rick tweets, quote, Kyle just tried shotgunning a craft beer and puked all over himself. Bleeping rookie. Once he gets himself together, I'm going to slam his ass through a table. End quote. So you're starting to get a sense of how this night went, what this was all about. The entire night is leading towards that, leading up to that moment. Kyle going through a table in true Buffalo style. And sure enough, right around midnight, dude launches a scope from some random parking lot with dried vomit on his Jim Kelly gamer. And then it finally happened.
This is for my buddy is back in Green Bay. Everyone out in Buffalo, I love you. Shout out Jim Rome. Shout out Adam Hawk. This is why I came to Buffalo right here. Hey, guy in the blue. I'm coming through this table. Get ready, baby. I got a Budweiser. Here we go.
I don't know what's more impressive. That sounded good, too. You should see how it looks. That looks as good as that sounds. So what's more impressive? Slamming himself through a table or shotgunning a Bud Heavy? Not a Bud Light. A Bud Heavy. What, was there no smoothie around? No motor oil you wanted to crush? That is the thickest domestic on the planet. And this guy put it down in about 2 seconds after the night that he had had. He smashed the empty right over his head, and he jumped right through the table. It was amazing. So what I'm saying is this. If a clone shouts me out by name and then runs himself through a table, I'm going to run it back right here the next day. Every single time, these freaking guys. So shout out to my man, Rick. Shout out to my man, Kyle. Shout out to the other clones that they're all rolling with. Really appreciate y'all a lot, more than you will ever know. Thanks for meeting up. Thanks for bringing the jungle closer together. Thanks for documenting that entire thing. Thanks for sneaking a giant Rome Show sign into the arena during the game. Appreciate you dudes. Just like I appreciate all of you who make this show a huge part of your lives on a daily basis and after hours. 30 years in, not only am I still doing this, not only is this still a damn good show, 30 years in, dudes are still getting the show tattooed on their body. 30 years in, dudes literally will go through a folding table for the program. 30 years in, guys are still representing hard. Hell yes, I'm all about it. I am all about it. Appreciate you all. I've got your back. Well done. Dude's still repping the show hard. three decades in. That's a clone stock in Buffalo. My man Rick in Buffalo putting it together. Kyle in Green Bay with the road trip. Rick said he had a buddy that he hadn't seen in 25 years from Arizona that made the road trip for it. Hey, Rick, what about your boy Mike? Remember Rick called the show yesterday and said, "Hey, Mike, why don't you stand up for the wife once and for all? Stand up to her and tell her you hate her family and come out with us." Did that guy make it? Some of the react. "Hi, Jim. Did you hear Kyle ordered ranch dressing for his wings? Do you want to know how I found out? Because he puked it up all over his shirt. I haven't seen that many stains on a shirt since Ray in St. Paul ate soup with his hands." Sarah T, Providence, Rhode Island. My man's one of those dudes who, you know, back in the day when you were in college and you went hard, there were always those guys that if they puked, that meant their night was over. But then there was the other crew that if they puked, that meant, man, it's let's go. Now I'm feeling better. Let's get it. I can't lie to you. I was one of those guys that when I puked, I was done. I'm like, yeah, I'm good. Now I'm done. But the real athletes were the guys like, come on, man, let's go. I feel good now. It's Kyle in Green Bay. Kyle in Green Bay definitely is that team. "Dear Kyle in Green Bay, tell me how my bleep tastes. Sign the table."
Tell me how my ass tastes.
Brian in Syracuse. He went through it once, and then he went through it a second time. I got to admit, I was pretty impressed with Kyle. I was impressed that he had one of the all-time great flameouts on the show. And that he somehow bounced back from that flameout. That was amazing. And then I was impressed that he made a road trip from Green Bay to California, ran out of money, and slept in his car for 3 days, and somehow made it back home. I was also impressed that he found me in Minneapolis, had me sign his back, and then he got the signature tattooed. But I'm not sure I've ever been more impressed than I was with Kyle last night and his act, repping the show the way he did. And then finally this, "Dear Jim, are we sure Rick in Buffalo is an actual teacher and not just a hall monitor? Lincoln Narc thinks that Rick went a little overboard ratting out Kyle's every move on Twitter." Signed, Brett from Bugahaw. "Wore Rick using the back of his giant Rome sign to jot down notes all night long, which he then turned over to the principal. War clone stocks. Dude, he didn't rat his boy out. He had his boy's back. He documented the night. He shared the night with the rest of us. I'm glad he did. Otherwise, how would we know? We wouldn't have. Mike in Buffalo. Mike, what's going on? How are you?
Bro, how you doing, man?
Good. How about you, Mike? What's up?
I'm great. Great. First time, long time. I know you love hearing that. So the real reason I didn't make it to the clone stock, whatever nonsense Rick spewed at the end of the day yesterday was totally false. I'm actually Rick's probation officer, so there's obviously a conflict of interest there. And matter of fact, he's actually lucky I even let him go out last night based on his last two probation violations. The first probation violation, he was caught falsifying a urine sample. So now the guys around the office and I refer to Rick as Ontario Smith, a.k.a. the Wiznator. The second time he violated his probation is I caught him trying to rip off his ankle bracelet. True story, Jim. I found him looking down at it, screaming at it, "Why won't you come off, you scumbag?" Anyways, Rome, happy holidays to the clones, to the crew, Hawk and company. Wore Rick's hat saying Google Dolls, but his nose saying Gin Blossoms. I'm out.
Mike. All right, Mike in Buffalo is saying the real reason, it's not that I'm afraid of the wife. It's not that I won't stand up to the wife. It's that I'm his probation officer. Wore his hat saying Goo Goo Dolls, put his nose saying Gin Blossoms. When you've got the game this guy has, I can do that for you. Let's go to the 2013 champ. One of the best ever to do it. Mark in Hollywood. What's up, Mark?
Yo, I am here to help your 3-hour recap of that fat-necked bug-eyed dirtbag Rick in Buffalo and his first annual clone crank stock. Yo, Jim, this thing had all the ingredients to make a successful sausage soiree. From the drunk clones that showed up looking for a piece of Rick, like he was that wasted freaky chick on the Gronk cruise, to the sad look, the realization that these losers spent their one and only hall pass from their miserable wives getting spit on while Rick talks, this backdoor brouhaha had more nuts than a Bondo boat party. So, you would think this walking Joaquin email would be in heaven. So why is this fat fish head taking a run at me? Rick, I know you've done so much toot that your eyes look like Edwin Moses and your beak looks like Artie Lang's, but the funny thing is I used to like you as a caller. If you can look back through your opioid-induced haze, you'll remember when you first called, I was the one that was like, I like this dude Rick, rack him. But see, that's when you had your normal voice, wasn't it, you faux-ass bitch? That bland, wimpy, Matt in Cleveland-esque voice didn't get you anywhere, so you decided to rebrand. I get it. But question, why decide to sound like Jeff in Richmond with hemorrhoid flare-up? And why would you decide to give CBS Sports Network those mugshots from when you were busted by Chris Hansen in that seedy Crapchester motel? Have a seat in the corner, sir. It's not what it looks like! I was helping her with her homework! Then why did you bring a box of wine? I can't control my horny level! Laugh out loud! Good brother Rick, I get it. You gotta do you. You want to call a radio show and sound like the bastard offspring of Rush Limbaugh and Roseanne Barr? You do you. You want to pretend to be an internet gangster, but when things get too deep, you delete your tweets? You do you. You want to have a pop-up orgy party and turn tricks in the Sabre bathroom stalls and parking lots of Bills Stadium like the hoe you are so you can afford tickets to that Oasis knockoff band? You do you. But you're not a tough guy. You're not a gangster. You're a piece of crap, born in a piece of crap, and by your own admission, raised by a piece of crap. If only there was a club for that, Jim. War Rick reinventing himself, coming back as Lene Kukua. War Rick throwing himself on the field along with the rest of the sex toys. And War Rick's wife having a fetish for black midget actors from Hollywood. God bless us, everyone.
Uh-oh. Hey, you fat fish head.
Fat?
You know I love you. But that 5'1" guy in pumps just eviscerated you. Fellas, I tell you to save some of it for the smack off, but don't. Keep it coming. Keep it coming. That is a vicious beef. And now right here, I go to the phones. And apparently another gentleman representing another academic institution apparently wants to make his pitch as well. Let's find out. We go to Illinois. James in Illinois. Hello, James. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon, Jim. How are you? This is Dr. James Bartholomew, and I'm the president of DeVry University. I wanted to call you with an offer that I don't think you can refuse, Jim. And before I get to the exciting information about our cutting-edge university, we have a few prerequisites. I got to just make sure we get out of the way real quick. Has Jake ever been convicted of less than 3 felonies?
No, he has not.
Can he read?
Yes, he can.
Lastly, Jim, and I'm sorry, is he more intelligent than Adam Hawke?
All right, now, Doctor, that's insulting. All right, I'm not having that. Get out of here. Get out of here. Get out of here. No. Is my kid more intelligent than Adam Hawke? Not a very good call. Hey, listen, man, there are certain lines you do not cross. That's one of them. That was the, quote, president of DeVry. All right, let's keep moving. Gina in Napa, and I love Napa because Janet and I got married in Napa, so we love Napa. Gina, what's going on? How are you?
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Gina, I'm so good. What's going on? What brings you back?
Thanks so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. I just actually called because, yes, I was in Indy as well, and I moved back to Napa because that's where I'm from. And really the only reason I called is because since you sent me that great smoker, my mom, my beautiful Italian mom, has been trying to send you and your crew her world-famous biscotti, And she's so frustrated. She keeps telling me, I can't find their address. I can't find where to send them the biscotti. And so she said, please find out where I can send them these biscotti. So I said, okay, Mom, I'm going to call the show, and I'm going to find out where you can send the biscotti.
Oh, that is awesome. I love that. And I appreciate her so much, Gina. That is so nice. What you want to do is definitely stay on, and you can talk to Adam Hawk, and he'll hook you up with that information and no clones. Gina can have it, but you can't. So, Gina, how is Napa? What are you doing in Napa?
I moved back here to be with my family, and I am, excuse me, I am just loving being back here, and because, like I said, this is where I was born and raised, and it is awesome to be back here. And now you and Janet need to come back here.
You know,
for your
we will.
Anniversary.
You know, we used to do it every single year until we had the kids, and now we don't do that so much. But yeah, we need to get back there. Well, good. Good for you. I'm so glad you're back with your family. I'm so glad you're back in Napa. It is one of the most beautiful places. Adam, pick her up really quickly. We are joined by the head coach of Troy, Neil Brown. Neil, nice to have you back. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well, man. I appreciate the intro.
Good to have you, Neil. You earned that intro. All right, so it's a busy week for you in that you've got the preparation for the bowl game. You have the early signing day today. Then the bowl game itself is on Saturday. So first things first, how is life around Troy right about now?
It's crazy. We, you know, first time for everything. So signing day at the Renaissance here in Mobile. So hotel signing day. We signed 16 guys this morning. Went to the Children's Hospital. Talking to you, and now I have practice this afternoon. So a lot going on, but good times. We play a really good Buffalo team in this bowl game on Saturday. But busy Wednesday, but fortunate to be busy.
It's a good day, a lot going on. Now, when you have a signing day, every head coach is going to talk about how they got exactly what they wanted. And I'm sure for the most part, that's probably true. But let me go about this a different way. When you're looking for guys who are going to be a good fit for your program, what types of things and characteristics are you looking for?
That's a good question. I laugh because I'm waiting for the head coach to get on a radio interview or on television and talk about how disappointing they were in their signing class.
Right.
You know, because everybody's saying the same thing. It's a three-step process. So, Jim, here's what we look at. Can they play? Number one, are they good enough? If they're given position, do they have the physical tools to be a Division I football player? So if the answer is no, we don't go any further. So that's the first question. Are they good enough? Number two, academically, can they be successful doing college work? So if the answer to both of those are yes, all right. If it's no, they can't do college work, we're done. Okay. Then it goes to the third question. Are they the type of guy we want in our program? Are they about the right things? Is their character, all right, and their moral makeup, what is it what we need in our program? So those are the three questions. And if any of those are no, then we turn them down. If they check mark all three, then those are guys that we're going to push and recruit, and we get our share. We lose some. We lost some today. We signed 16, holding out for another one. But that's the quick checklist that we go through.
Neil Brown joining us. That makes sense to me. Now, when you and I have talked in the past, we've talked about how you turn the program around. Now you're going to your third straight bowl game. You've got a chance for a third straight 10-win season. I know you had big plans when you arrived, but has this even exceeded your own expectations?
You know, we're in a – geographically, we sit where we can get really good football players, and football is really important in our area. So, and Troy's always been successful. Now, if we win this game on Saturday, it'll be the most successful three-year run in the program's history. So that's something that we're really motivated to get done on Saturday. You know, this is the year that I always looked at that was going to kind of be a hump year for us because we only got 11 seniors. Only five of those seniors were recruited players. And then we lost our starting quarterback in game five. So, you know, for our staff to get done what they've gotten done and our players – get done in this year with such a small senior class and overcome some of the injuries, this year has exceeded my expectations. But overall, always felt like that we could win and be competitive for a conference championship every year. Doesn't mean you're going to win one every year. They're really hard. You have to have some breaks and those type of things. But felt like that we get Troy to a point we'd be competitive in the conference and be in the conference championship race right at the end of the season each and every year.
Troy head coach Neil Brown joining us. You know, it's one thing to be competitive and have a shot at that conference title every single year, but it's not just about racking up those wins and inside a conference. We're talking about you giving Clemson all they could handle a while back. We're talking about you beating LSU in their place. We're talking about beating Nebraska in Lincoln earlier this year. So how do you explain that you're consistently able to go into stadiums that hold more people than the town of Troy, Alabama, and come out with wins. How do you explain that?
Yeah. Well, we've got approximately 20,000 people, so about every stadium we play is going to be bigger than our hometown. But, you know, I think it's a couple things. I think number one is our players play with an edge. Everybody on our football team that plays feels like that they got overlooked, that they should be. So we're sitting here in lower Alabama, and everybody on our football team thinks that Alabama missed on them, Auburn missed on them, Florida State or Georgia missed on them, or the University of Florida. They missed on our guys. So when they get an opportunity to go play in one of those venues against an opponent they really feel like that they should, at the level they should be at, they're going to take advantage of that. So we have really good players. I think the second thing is we do a really good job of developing our student-athletes. And what I mean by that is we're not getting finished products. We signed a lot of really good football players today, but we didn't sign a five-star recruit. I think we signed one four-star. We're not – so we've got to develop our players, and from a strength conditioning standpoint, nutrition standpoint, all those type of things, we're doing a really good job taking some under-recruited kids, developing those guys that have raw ability and a lot of hunger, and then putting them in a position schematically to be successful against those type of opponents.
We're talking to Neil Brown. You know, Neil, when you lay it out like that, and I could see where others might have an interest in you. When you look at the success you've had, your phone's going to ring. So inevitably, when that happens and your name comes up attached to other coaching jobs, how traditionally have you gone about handling that? What do you do with that?
Well, I think first, you're upfront and you're honest with the people in your building and in your locker room. So I think winning creates opportunities. But then it's the opportunity's got to fit the coaches' wants and needs. And for me, it's about being in a place that not only you can be successful, but also a place that you enjoy going to work, you enjoy living, and those type of things. My wife and three kids really happy here in Troy. We can win a bunch of football games. When those opportunities present themselves, you got to evaluate them. But we haven't found the right fit yet, and we're happy here, and really trying to do something that's never been done before.
I respect that. That's a really honest answer. Now, at the same time, you've got a brand new facility that you moved into in August. And, I mean, this facility has four Powerade slushy machines. When you're beating LSU and you're beating Nebraska in their place and you come back home for a Powerade slushy, is there really any reason to think about going anywhere other than where you are right now? I mean, really.
Hey, Jim, first, kudos to your research team. So I'm confident that you're not searching Troy's slushy machine. But so kudos to your research team.
I am.
And yeah, so we've got a $27 million facility that we just opened up. And our deal is here is we treat our players and we run our program just like an elite Power 5 program. We call it balling on a budget. Now we ball on a budget a little bit lighter than some of those, but we're going to treat our players the same way. And so we've got a huge walk-in cold tub. We've got Powerade slushies. We got two different players' lounge for our guys to enjoy themselves. So the facility's been really good to us. I think it's going to start paying dividends and recruiting probably in this class, but it's been nice. And like I said, kudos on the research. Powerade slushies big.
Yeah, it's got to be big, Neil. It's got to be so great to come back, and it's got to be so great to recruit to that. But let me ask you this. The previous facility, of course, did not have the Powerade slushy machines, and it had a bit of a mouse problem. Most coaches would make sure that recruits did not know that when they came to visit, but you want to make sure that they knew exactly what they were getting into. Back then, why did you approach it like that?
Well, we didn't have the mice issue right until we moved out. So
okay.
I'll come clean with that. So the new facility is right next to the old facility. So when they started digging down for the new facility, they messed up and some of the mice didn't like that. So, but here's our deal is we're always an open book. So we don't spend any time talking about other programs. We're not trying to hide anything at Troy. And that's really just our approach, period, in recruiting. And so our locker room, we dressed up every facility we had at Troy before we had this new building. The only thing that we couldn't invest in, it didn't make sense to make a heavy investment in the locker room because we knew this new building was coming. So, but we didn't avoid it. We just showed it to them. It was what it was. It wasn't as modern. It was fine, but it wasn't as modern. I felt like, hey, you be up front. You show the recruit and their families coming in what we are, and you show them what they're going to get to. And I think people appreciate honesty, and they did. Now, and Andy Staples came down, spent a week, and did a great job covering us. Had a great story in SI and Sports Illustrated. but he caught us out of the mice. That was one of those things I thought I was telling him maybe off record. Then it got into the book.
I gotcha. You know, Staples is my guy. You know, that's pretty much where I saw that note. I get that. But, you know, that's the thing. You guys are so upfront about everything. People do respect that. Now, when you mentioned the book, you and I talked about the book club. The last time you came on the program, we talked about the book club. I know it's been a hectic season. Were you able to get any reading done in season?
So I struggle with reading in season. I'll tell you, the book that I just got, and no feedback. I don't know his work, but I just got the book that Michael Lombardi wrote, The Gridiron Genius. So I'm looking forward to reading that. I've been telling our kids, just if we can just get to the 23rd, the morning of the 23rd, which is Sunday, then I looking forward to a little rest and relaxation. Now, I've got three kids, 10, 7, and 3, so there won't be a whole lot of rest, but that's the next book I'm gonna crack open.
Hey, Neil, what is that for you? Like, if you get to the 23rd, and you get to the 23rd the way you want to get to the 23rd, when you talk rest and relaxation, for you, what does that mean? How much time will you give yourself?
So we'll shut it down for a couple weeks, really. Right until we'll go from the 23rd to the 6th, and man, it's a long season. It's a grind, especially when you throw recruiting into it. So we played our last game the Saturday after Thanksgiving, and then basically we're on the road up until last Friday, and you had official visits every weekend between them. Then you're preparing for a bowl game, and now so our official visitors left on Sunday. Monday, we game planned all day. We came to the bowl site on Tuesday, and there's all kind of events and practices all week. Play Saturday night, and so the break starts on Sunday, and it's well earned. And look forward to spending some time with some family and some friends.
Got me calling you on Wednesday. No days off. No days off. Listen, one last thought. You know, there's been a lot of talk recently about expanding the college football playoff. I know you're only focused on what you can control, but as a G5 coach, what kind of thoughts do you have about expanding the playoff and making sure that G5 programs get a fair look at a playoff spot in a potential 8-team field if you can run the table?
Well, I think it has to be a reasonable number, and I think 8's a reasonable number. I don't see it going to 16. I just think you're asking a lot of an 18 to 22-year-old non-professional player to play any more than 13, 14 football games, 15 max in a season. I just think it's a long season for that. But I do believe an 18 playoff makes sense. I think there does need to be a G5 representative. You look at the G5 over the last few years, obviously we've had some big wins. Some other schools have had some big wins. I think the top of the G5 can be very competitive in a playoff setting. You saw that last year with Central Florida beating a very good Auburn team.
I don't think there's any doubt. Troy's 9-3. They're the Sun Belt East Division co-champs, and they've got a big one. They've got a bowl game coming up on Saturday, Troy versus Buffalo in the Dollar General Bowl. The head coach at Troy is Neil Brown. Neil, I know it's a busy, busy week. Really appreciate you, and great to have you back. Neil, good luck this weekend.
Thanks for having me on. Y'all have a great day.
Mark Stein joins us once again. It's good to have you back, Mark. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I need to get on that Peloton, though. I'm not aging as well as you.
Dude, I know, right? It's hard. You should get on that thing. You'd like that. I love mine. You'd like yours. If you get one, you should. You're a rich guy. You can. Promo code Rome,
that,
bro.
But we'll see.
Promo code Rome, Mark Stein. All right, so there's lots to talk about involving the Lakers, especially with LeBron and Anthony Davis. But, Mark, go back to the weekend. You've covered that league for a long time. So what was your reaction when news started to break on a 3-team trade Friday night involving the Wizards, Grizzlies, and Suns, and then it falling apart over confusion about which player with the last name Brooks, Marshawn or Dillon, was involved? Have you ever seen anything like that?
No, not over a name. I mean, that was... You know, that was the reaction. You know, the jokes just started. People were saying, don't tell me this thing fell apart because one team thought it was trading Marshawn Brooks and the other team thought they were getting Dillon Brooks. That can't be it. And, of course, that did turn out to be it. So it's crazy. It's a sham. And I don't think you can even single out any one team. It looks bad for all of them. But, you know, it's also... It's a classic example of why, especially on social media, the NBA is king. I mean, these kinds of crazy things happen and unfold in real time, and the public and the media, we can't get enough of it. So, I mean, we obviously love these things and soak them up, but when you look at the trade, yeah, I don't know that Washington or Phoenix really came out very well here. Phoenix has already turned around and waived Austin Rivers, so they can't even use him as a trade asset. They didn't get a point guard in this deal. And the biggest thing for Washington, okay, you get Trevor Ariza, but you don't get any draft picks in the deal like they would have in the original construction. So I don't know how much Washington really helped itself either.
Right. So all of that, and to your original point, NBA Twitter is still king. NBA Twitter is absolutely the best. Mark Stein joining us. Now, you cover the Lakers and Anthony Davis in your newsletter yesterday, and it continued to become an even bigger story. What do you make of LeBron not only not avoiding the topic of trading for Davis, but talking about it openly and talking about how awesome it would be? What do you make of that?
Look, on one hand, you could say it's an absolutely obvious statement. He even used the word duh. Of course, LeBron James' dream scenario is getting Anthony Davis on his team. But just the fact that he addresses it publicly stokes it up. I think anyone who has watched LeBron James for a long period of time also knows that he doesn't say these things by accident. There's always he's all looking big picture. There's always reasons for why he says the things he says. And, you know, I did in my newsletter that came out before the game last night, I've been hearing around the league, people are raising the question already, why aren't the Lakers going full bore after Anthony Davis? Because the Celtics can't trade for him during the season. The Celtics have to be spectators now because both Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving are on designated scale rookie contracts, and you can't trade for two players like that. The league rules don't allow it. The Celtics have already traded for Kyrie. Unless the Celtics move Kyrie or sign him to a new deal, you can't have he and Davis on the same team when they're both under that same kind of contract. So the Celtics have the most assets in the league, but they can't do anything right now with Anthony Davis. So why aren't the Lakers throwing everything they can at the Pelicans to go after AD right now? And by LeBron saying what he said, it makes you think that he has the exact same feeling. Why aren't we trying to get this guy now? But saying all that, New Orleans doesn't have to engage, and all the signals all season have been that they don't even want to think about this until the summer, because obviously in the summer, the Pelicans can put a contract extension on the table for Davis that exceeds $230 million. So obviously they want to do that first and see, does Anthony Davis, would he really turn that down?
Mark Stein joining us. Mark, so what is your sense as to how Davis looks at his situation in New Orleans? What do you think motivates and drives him?
Well, look, based on everything we've seen so far from him, I mean, he loves New Orleans. He loves that city. He has a close association with it. And to me, for something to happen during the season, Davis would have to be a driver in this. And it isn't, at least based on my observation, I don't see it being in his personality to go to the Pelicans and try to force them to make a trade now. I think the likely scenario is he finishes the season there, they play the season out, see how they fare. Obviously, it's been a disappointing start to the season. They're not where they thought they'd be. The defense has slipped considerably, but they have had a ton of injuries. They really haven't been able to put their team on the court. So based on what I've seen, I don't think Anthony Davis in any way, shape, or form is even thinking about that right now. But you know, based on what LeBron said, the chatter, you know, we've got 50 days until the trade deadline. The chatter will start to ramp up. And because of New Orleans' position, they're basically a 500 team scuffling for a playoff berth. This topic is not going away.
Mark Stein covers the NBA for the New York Times. Of course, Mark, we know what Kevin Durant said about players, star players not wanting to run with LeBron. So what is the dream scenario for the Lakers in terms of building around LeBron? And then how likely is that dream to become a reality?
Well, look, they're going to have cap space. So in their perfect world, they get a free agent and trade for Anthony Davis. That's probably too ambitious. And, you know, it's all kind of, it goes back to the point of, if you're going to have to trade, you know, they have these four very good young players who
have great reputations around the league, Kuzma, Hart, Ingram, and Ball. You know, if you're going to have to trade two, three, even all four of those guys to get Anthony Davis at some point, that's the thinking. Why wouldn't you want to try to do that sooner rather than later to try to get him? But again, New Orleans would have to be willing, and I don't think New Orleans is willing. I don't think New Orleans is even thinking about this. Again, I think New Orleans' dream scenario is let's get through the season, do the best we can, make a playoff run. They're going to try to make a move here themselves before the deadline to strengthen their team. See how this season plays out, and then go to Davis after the season and say, look, we can offer you a $230 million extension. You're happy here. Commit to us. We'll keep building this thing. And they're going to hope that they can convince him to take that extension. If he doesn't take that extension, then obviously that's a signal to the league. You know, everybody will be after him at that point.
Mark Stein joining us for a few more moments. Mark, so LeBron reportedly dined with Carmelo Anthony earlier this week and was talking about him last night. I mean, could you see Melo in a Laker uniform? And if so, what would that be like?
You know, the management has resisted it to this point. I don't think Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka have wanted to go in that direction. And LeBron, by all accounts, is not going to them and saying, I want this to happen now. Make this happen. Even yesterday, he talked about Carmelo, but he didn't flat out say, we need to go get this guy. I think, you know, obviously they're very close. I think the players who are really close to Melo hate seeing what's happened where he went to Houston and they were together 10 games and he was ousted. And, you know, at this point, no one is showing interest. You know, the Lakers have been mentioned. Philadelphia has been mentioned. Charlotte is a team that, because of Carmelo Anthony's longtime relationship with Michael Jordan, the Hornets owner, through Jordan Brand, you know, people have thought maybe Charlotte would look into this. But so far, no one has shown an inclination to go after him. You know, we'll force it in year one of a four-year deal when he just got to the Lakers? I mean, the signals so far have been no, but I don't think we can rule it out. I mean, obviously LeBron loves to have him there, so I'm not going to sit here and say no, absolutely no, it's not going to happen. But to this point, I mean, look, Carmelo's been available for a month, more than a month, and nobody's moved on it.
Mm-hmm. Listen, you've got range. You and I have talked, for instance, tennis in the past. Let me talk hockey with you before you go, specifically Buffalo Sabres hockey. How you feeling about Jack Eichel and the Sabres right now?
I love him, man. I absolutely – it's fun to just be a fan and just root for – you know, the guy is so good. But honestly, for me, the interesting part about Eichel was just totally being a fan, you know, 100% a fan, not a media member. You know, the Sabres tanked to get him. It was the year that McDavid and Eichel were available at the top of the draft. So to go through that as a fan and what it feels like to when your own team is tanking, it really gave me kind of like a whole new outlook on it. You know, we write about tanking in the NBA. We cover it as media people all the time. And I remember late in that season before the draft, the Sabres were in Dallas and they took a one-goal lead three times, and every time they scored, all the Sabres fans in the building in Dallas were miserable. We wanted to lose because we needed to get a top two pick. And you see Eichel play now and you see why. The guy's a beast and he's only getting better. He finally has line mates that are on his level. The Jeff Skinner trade was huge and it's fun. I'm having fun.
You know, Mark, it's really interesting because I get this quite a bit. Hey, Rome, who's your favorite team? And the answer is always the same. My favorite team is the team that gives me something to talk about. I've got no favorite teams. As media members, we don't root. We understand this. How rare is it, and what's it like to be actually to be a fan and be able to have a rooting interest in something when they pay us not to root?
Yeah, well, you're a generalist. You have to be neutral on all sports. I don't. You know, I can be a Buffalo Sabres fan in hockey. I can be the biggest Manchester City fan in the United States. I can openly love my Titans. I don't have to worry about it. And I never want to lose touch with that. I don't want to stop being a sports fan. It's too fun.
No, that's why we got into it, of course. Mark Stein, New York Times NBA reporter. Quickly, I mentioned the newsletter. If people listening want to find out about that, they want to read it, how do they go about doing it?
All you got to do is go to Google, type in Mark Stein newsletter. You'll see a picture that looks like me asleep. I'm not sleeping. I'm actually typing away on my BlackBerry. Put your email in there, and you get the newsletter in your inbox for free.
Dude, do you still rock a BlackBerry?
For sure.
That is so awesome.
I've never given up those keys. I'll die with one in my hand.
Have you got a physical key? Which one have you got? Have you got the key? Is it the key one?
I got the key two. It's
key
beautiful.
Two. How is it?
Love it.
Good.
Never,
man.
Like I said, I have an iPhone too. I got two phones, but I still write even first drafts. I got to write them on the BlackBerry.
Plus, the battery life is probably for days, right? If not weeks.
Great battery life, great security, but it's all about the keyboard, man. I cannot give up my keyboard.
Mark Stein, New York Times NBA reporter, closing the show. Mark, great to have you back. Thank you very much.
Sounds good, man.
Nothing but respect.
Good night now.